All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. If you're listening to this right now in the week that it's come out, we're in the States. We're in the United States of America. I guess if we're not, then something's gone horribly wrong in the future that we didn't know of. But still in the studio today, answering listener questions, because there's so many good ones to get through. And, you know, we just want to say that, you know, we've really enjoyed your support over the years. And this is the last one ever. Just kidding. So... we have some stuff today on just movement and traveling, which we thought was appropriate because we are traveling at the moment. We've lined up some pretty awesome guests. If you didn't know the guests that we've got on, we would have been posting about them on the Instagram, but go back and listen to last week's show. We got the guest lineup there city by city, and hopefully we've kind of successfully had some of those podcasts by this point. So we've got some good questions today from you guys, and then also as well, we will be reviewing an awesome documentary called... This Is How We Roll? No, Roll With Me.
Roll With Me.
Roll With Me, which is a Netflix documentary on a guy who did the first attempt. We won't give you the conclusion of his attempt, but the first attempt across America, he went from California to New York. That was the line that he drew through America on a wheelchair. But the first, it's been done before, but he did this on an everyday wheelchair, so completely unmodified. So... we will talk about that awesome documentary. All right. So, first question to start off this week's after show is by Joey. Joey Joe Jr. What are three pieces accessories? Maybe three pieces of accessories or three accessory pieces for the gym you can't go without. I assume he means accessory exercise, right? Not machinery.
Or accessories we bring in our gym bag?
No, I think it's like accessory movements, right?
Hmm.
Accessories for the gym, you can't go without. Joe, it's a difficult question to answer when it doesn't make sense, but what are you starting with? Let's go to accessory movements in the gym, you can't go without.
Good question. Accessory movements, I can't go
without. Three pieces. Is this like... maybe he means like clothing or something. I'm seriously stuck here. Les, what do you want to choose? Do you want to go three like accessories that you have to take to the gym? It says for the gym. And you can't go without. Les, do you want to do that?
Man, I don't bring anything to the gym.
No, we could come on with something.
It's definitely three over time I've used. But yeah, let's go. Like anything, you move on from stuff.
Yeah, but also you don't want to feel like you can't go without something because it's not always going to be there. And if you end up in that situation, you're fucked.
You're fucked.
Yeah. All right, so let's start. We'll go one for one.
Okay, I'm going to think. Things I actually bring to the gym. Things, like, there was a point where I would refuse to go to the gym without, if I can remember now, what's the thing we used to always wrap ourselves with?
Oh, a voodoo band?
Used to refuse to go to the gym without a voodoo band.
You use those a lot, yeah.
Fucking use them a lot. And I still think if you have a niggling injury, they are incredibly good way just to get rid of, like, pain and discomfort in an area or the stuff in an area before you train. I don't use them now because my general philosophy now is that if I have that problem, I probably shouldn't be like trying to push through in the training anyway. So it like, doesn't really help that. But if I had to, there probably is something I still would reach for.
Mm.
And when I had like bad tendonitis in my knees, like incredibly useful. Tendonitis in my elbow is incredibly useful. So I do think it still has a use. And I still see people using them at the gym. I know some people think like they're a waste of time, whatever, but I definitely don't think they are.
Yeah.
Definitely did like literally train better. Having used it, like it really can just like free up a joint that feels like it's really stuck. But now it's just like often I just like honestly can't be bothered
because
it's like quite a bit of effort and like fucking you got to do it tight. It's like uncomfortable when you do it and often like tears you when you like try and get it off. And a few times I like, couldn't get it off and fucking went into a complete panic.
Yeah.
But that is one that potentially if I was like training for a competition with a certain date and that required like pushing through some niggles and stuff like that. That's probably something I would reach back for my gym bag.
How was your swim run, by the way?
Swim run was very interesting. I'm still sore.
Did you beat your time?
We did. Smashed the time.
Nice.
Last year was 2 hours and 53 minutes, and this year was 2 hours and 36 minutes and 57 seconds.
Wow! So 20 minutes.
It was probably, I would say, the whole field was probably about 7-8 minutes faster, just because of the difference in conditions.
Yeah.
It was slightly higher tide on the way back last time, which makes a pretty big difference.
Because you've got to swim through more water.
Yeah, it's like one of the sims is 400 meters, but at low tide, it's like 200 and 200 of wading. And at high tide, it's maybe 300 of swimming and like 100 meters wading. So there's a difference there.
Wading is like you walking through the water.
Like deep water.
Yeah.
But we definitely did consider better. Very, very fun race. Coolest about this one was we basically started 3 minutes behind a pair of men that we were trying to chase down. And we were fucking trying to chase them the whole time, getting time updates. And we passed them with like 300 meters to go.
What was it in particular about these guys you were trying to pass?
They were the two other members from the gym.
Oh, okay.
Doing the race. It was the only other people we knew in the race doing it. And we had a bet on who was going to win. And they started 3 minutes ahead.
Why did you try to hide their identity just then?
I just didn't explain it very well. Yeah, the two people from the gym that we were...
it like it was a mystery.
No,
these two men...
We were battling against. So, they were men. We were men and women pair.
Right.
Started 3 minutes behind. And we were fucking trying to hunt them down. 2 hours, 33 minutes into the 2 hours and 37 minutes took us. We passed them.
What was it that made you pass them?
We were just slowly... we were slowly catching up to them.
Right.
Like, basically, every 30 minutes, we gained, like, 30 seconds.
That's a slow gain. It's 1 second a minute.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I can see what people really see in those endurance races because there's something... Like, passing someone in a six-minute workout is one thing, but passing someone after, like, 2.5 hours is like, potentially a little bit cooler.
How was your swimming? Like, because I know you did this strange swim training.
Probably brings up again, but I did... If anyone's seen Tim Ferriss, I did the Total Immersion course that I think he made really popular.
Yeah.
So, definitely was already doing well. I found out, actually, the guy that he was talking about is... actually died recently, which is a shame. He's like a serious swimming genius.
Right.
But it's like a type
of... He died from old age or...
No, he's a really fit guy. He was like swimming marathons. Yeah. But yeah, he just died. I think he was like 60 or 70.
Oh, wow. It's pretty young.
Yeah, it was really young and a bit strange. But anyway, it's like a really effortless type of swimming, which I can tell you 100% I have not mastered yet. but fuck, it did make a difference. So like last time I basically had no swim training and pretty much all the difference this time, because we actually ran slower because my partner was slightly slower running than the previous time. But my swimming was much better. And last time, like, I was exhausted from freestyle about 1/3 into the race. And I did breaststroke. Part of it, I was just fucking pulling myself along the shark net for, like, 200 meters last time. So dead. I literally pulled myself 200 meters along a shark net.
Really? Is that illegal? Dying.
It's all right, apparently, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, by this time, I could do, like, the freestyle the whole way.
You did it the whole way?
The whole way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is a big difference. And I can... And, like, you can just do it for so much longer. Because you take so many fewer strokes all the time. So, like, in the time when I would have taken 20 strokes, I'll probably take, like, 8 strokes now. So, you're just way less tight and, like, barely kick as well. Which fucking helps because, by the end, any movements in my legs cause insane cramping. So, it's something I've done, like, the level one program for it. There's, like, multiple levels. And I'm interested in doing more of the levels. Not to become, like, an awesome swimmer. But more just because it teaches you how to, like, be able to swim, like, for fun. Like, so you can just jump in on, like, a pretty long swim and, like, not come out. Like, when I did my long swim, I came out. Like, I could barely walk when I came out. I'm not doing it right.
So, you've improved your swimming?
Definitely improved.
Do you think you've improved your pool time?
Yes, for sure. Okay. Yeah, I've tried it. And it's getting better. And I want to keep it getting better. Their whole theory is, like, basically, the stats they show is, like, a human is, like, 3% efficient in a water. And like Michael Phelps is maybe like 8% efficient in the water. So like 8% of your movements are actually propelling him forward.
Right.
So it basically means for me, I'm probably like 1% before I started this. Like every single movement I was doing was not making me go any further water. So any like practice I did was really just a waste of time. Because like, yeah, you get tired, which maybe has aerobic benefits, but you're not getting any better at propelling yourself. So it's like stripping away heaps of that unnecessary movement that there's fucking nothing to propel you forward. And just turning your body into something that like floats really well through the water.
I can vouch for your unnecessary movement. Yeah.
It's really interesting because they were saying like, pretty sure it's only very high level 100 meter swimmers get any actual forward propulsion out of kicking. Like you need to be a top level sprinter to actually get forward propulsion from your kicking. When they take it into studies, the actual like forward propulsion, like kicking doesn't really do almost anything.
But then how come, like when I did lots of swim training, we did just board kick.
Yeah, so they are... It's very different. They are, like, not fans of that stuff. Of separating the body into kicking and pulling. They really...
This is like, this school of thought on swimming, right?
It's really different. So, like, heaps of stuff you would have learned in regular swimming doesn't apply here. It's not to set a world record in 100 meters, but it's to, like, swim effortlessly for long periods of time. But they would never do, like, kicking with a board. Or stroke practice. Like, it's a completely different type of swimming. And I think it is particularly pretty good for CrossFitters. Because... they really help you get your heavy legs out of the water. For people with, like, do a lot of squatting, like myself,
Oh, so you still learn to keep your legs in the right position. You're just not really kicking.
You just only use a tiny bit of kicking, and it's actually just to help you move from side to side, rotate.
Mm.
There's nothing to do with forward propulsion.
Mm.
So, like, you are not viciously kicking.
Mm.
And what you notice when these guys do it is, like, they're making almost no splash in the water. So, it's super cool. I know AB has given it a go as well to improve her swimming in her CrossFit career.
So, it sounds like it's a school of swimming that doesn't make you, like, fast, or it doesn't make... You know, like, you're not going to break any records with this type of swimming. It's more like for people who aren't good at swimming and never learned swimming as a kid to just become efficient or become competent enough to swim as long as they need to.
Yeah, like, the people that do this well, I mean, they're excellent at swimming. So, like, much faster than you would ever need
for... But they were always swimmers, right?
Good swimmers, yeah. So,
like, naturally, yeah.
They already knew how to swim. So, it's not for setting a world record in 200 meters. But, like, nobody's really trying to do that.
Yeah.
But it is for everybody that just wants to... Like, it's really popular with triathletes. Because they're not trying to set a world record, right?
Yeah, they're just trying to be energy efficient.
They want to get out and feel like they've done nothing after an hour of swimming, but still be moving pretty quick.
Yeah.
And that's where it's, like, most popular, is that type of person. So, I would say if you're, like, into functional fitness or anything like that, it's such an ideal course. It wasn't cheap because, they're certified instructors and everything like that, but it is ideal for that. Because, like, let's work out how we can swim not tired. It's like a not tired sport.
Yeah.
You're always not tired. That's the point. As soon as you're tired, it's like, you've done this wrong. Because it's meant to be like going for a brisk walk.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I remember in Dubai, right? Because we watched the swim event in Dubai and it was that bike.
It was the bike erg and swimming.
Yeah. And the bike erg smokes your legs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were some really good swimmers out in the field, really good swimmers, like really high level swimming backgrounds. And they all took the top 10 spots. But you got to think, like, they probably weren't using their legs that much because of how tired they were. But where they're much better than the rest of the field is they know how to float.
Yeah.
Right? They know how to be on the surface of the water. So that seems like it would be, in theory, a large part of what they're teaching, right? Is to be more buoyant and be more efficient through the water, which is like what you wouldn't... It would be really hard to teach, right? Because I spent so much more time in the water than you as a kid. Naturally, I just know how to glide and float better. But that's like really hard to teach because it's like intuitive almost, right?
Well, they have a thing where it's like... Can't remember the exact percentages, where it's like 90-something percent of people, when you drop them in the water, they start like stroking as fast as they can and having as fast turnover as they can to make themselves go forward. And it's like a really small percentage, like naturally try and glide through the water. Like, first time you drop them in. They're the ones that become swimmers. So, and that's basically what they're trying to rewire you to do in the water. Like, you want to start moving, like, don't start stroking faster.
Yeah.
In the same way when you run, you, like, take quicker steps. It's different.
Yeah.
Like, learn how to float better. They do really cool, like, filming underneath. Like, if you've never seen yourself in an underwater camera, it's incredibly eye-opening.
Yeah, I've seen it.
You will, like, not believe what your body's doing. And, like, my feet were so low, I was almost, like, fucking standing up as I passed through the water. And you can just imagine how much water you're pushing with your body. So they have like techniques where your arm is much lower than normal to bring your feet up basically out of the water,
right? As like a kind of counterbalance.
As a counterbalance,
right? So when you learn to stroke, you push down really low.
Your arm is at 45 degrees rather than straight over your head.
What do you mean?
As you glide through the water, so like your body is straight on the surface, your arm is at 45 degrees, like a Hail Hitler
stroke. I'm not like stroking with like one arm out of the water and one arm overhead.
No,
I'm stroking with one arm down here.
Yeah, halfway in between. So, like 45 degrees, literally like a Hail Hitler sort of maybe position, like in front of the eyes. And then that arm doesn't get taken away until the next arm meets it. So, you've always got a counterbalance in front of you.
So, wow, okay, that's different.
If you want to look up, it's like a sick video of this Asian guy is like the best at it in the whole world. And he's got like a before and after on YouTube. And like, you see that, you're like, oh, this is what it's all about.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, it would just be, it's one of those things that I can imagine it'd be so hard to teach someone so much intuition that I have in the water, right? So, like, I had a pool growing up as well. So, like, I just would practice, like, I'd jump in the pool every day just as a kid and, you know, just, I was super comfortable in the water. I'd do heaps of laps underwater just to challenge myself and stuff. And you just float on your back, you'd float on your stomach, right? You're just so comfortable in the water. But, like, how do you teach that, right? I guess this is, like, the way to teach it because...
This is the way. And it's crazy how many drills they have. So, it'll be, like, to practice the stroke, like, you're standing on the ground most of the time, just, like, practicing a stroke. So, it's, like, they...
Oh, not even in the water.
Not even in the water.
Right.
It's like, there's no fucking laps. It's like, only technique. Because they don't give a fuck about your fitness. Like, these guys, even like the founder who's obviously dead now, but didn't look like a very fit guy.
Mm.
They're like, not about fitness. Like, it's only about technique in the water. So, she was, I mean, our instructor was like, hey, like, squat is like a complete waste of your time.
Because you're tired. Because
you're just going, getting super tired and just reinforcing like horrific technique.
Right.
Kind of like if you didn't know how to snatch, just going and just jumping in groups of people doing waves of Grace or Isabel. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
So, it's just like, it's only technique, basically.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in the squad, like, you would learn some technique stuff, but most of it was already assumed knowledge. You know how to swim, get in, do these laps.
And that's why it doesn't work for adults.
Yeah.
Who, like, didn't know how to swim, doesn't come intuitively. Like, jumping into some sort of squad thing, it's like an exercise and getting tired in the water.
It didn't. Remember when we had that comp coming up and we had to train in the water, it didn't make you any better at swimming in terms of your technique. Like, you still suck technique. You were just better at a worse technique because you just done more of it, right? It's like people who deadlift with a round back. They just get really good at deadlifting with a round back.
Mm.
But then when you get them to set with a straight back, they're really weak because they're using all the right muscles instead of all the wrong muscles, but they haven't trained them. So, I guess it's kind of like the same thing, right? Yeah, that's interesting. You didn't do a retest on like 100 meter time or anything?
I'm going to, yeah. I can tell you the first time I did 500 meters.
And I was you're going to do a 500 meter test?
Took me like 13 minutes and 30 seconds, which is unbelievably slow.
Which is like just 2.5 minutes, 100. So, it's a minute 25 per 50.
Yeah.
It's very slow.
Very fucking slow. That's where I was at when I started. And hopefully, by the end, I was hoping it'd be like under 9 minutes, I think would be where I think...
Under 9 minutes, which would give you just under a minute per 50. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Like a minute. Like 55 seconds of 50. Yeah.
And
so, it'd be like nearly on the minute, basically.
Yeah. And I think from my practice, it seems like I'm probably 30% of the way there. So, if I retest it now, I think it'd be around 11 minutes.
Okay.
But I haven't done the whole 500 yet.
Mm.
Mostly because the whole point is they're like, hey, don't do it until you're tired.
Okay.
So, most of the time, you just practice 6 strokes and then stop and try it again. And just
right.
Always practicing small amounts.
So, how many lessons did you do this?
It's like a 4-part course. And it's like some classroom and some in the water.
Classroom?
Yeah, classroom.
Theory.
Yeah, theory. More just like looking at videos of you swimming.
Right.
And her just savaging you how fit you are with video evidence.
Yeah. I'd be really interested to see. You know what we should do, right? We should, because I haven't trained my swimming in ages, right? We should, when you go to retest your 500, when do you think that'll be?
I want to just do the second part of the course, probably in a few months.
Okay. When you go to test your 500, let me know. I'll jump in the pool with you and we'll see how it plays out, right? From like, me, like, comprehensive swimming background, but have not trained it at all recently.
Probably say you also have a slightly better skeletal system for swimming.
Oh, yeah. I'd just be interested to see kind of, like, where the, like, balance would be there. Yeah, I hope you're
really good. The biggest way they show you improving is just, like, how many strokes it takes you to do 50 meters. They're, like, seriously cut down on the amount of strokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's meant to go, like, 20% of what you used to do.
Yeah. Oh, like, swimming fitness is a real thing. Like, when we started back in that swimming program again, the difference between, like, when I started and when I ended up finishing was, like, crazy difference. Like, I imagine this 500 would be fucking hard for me. I haven't done that sort of distance in swimming in ages. Like, it was almost to the point where when I first started back in the swimming, I couldn't do a tumble turn age 50. But, like, back in the day, like, you tumble turn for days, you know? But now it's like, yeah, it'd be interesting. But it'd be cool.
The most traumatic experience I ever had was absolutely being so bad at swimming and trying to do the Bondi to Bronte swim, 2.5 kilometers in open water. And I literally couldn't swim. Man, it took me like an hour and 20 minutes.
And what, most people finish in 40 or something?
I think my brother was like 37 minutes, 30 minutes. How long it's meant to be. Man, it took me so long. So many people asked me if I wanted to stop. Everyone's like, bro, you need to lift home. I'm like, just fuck off. I literally was having trouble walking when I got out. I was so dizzy.
Yeah.
I was just sick.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember we had we called it the Champagne Gold, and that was the swim run for our high school. Like, it was an annual event for our year, and like I was up against all like the lifeguards and the beachy boys and stuff. And like this one year, I trained super hard for it. I was like, because it was a big bragging rights. Well,
it's pretty short, right? It's like a sprint run and then swim.
Yeah, I think it was probably like, I'm going to say like 600 meter run and it was a short swim. It was probably like 100 meter swim, but you do like, Then you do 5 laps.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure how long the whole event takes, but it's hard. But the two boys that were, like, the best swimmers in our year, like, murdered it. And, you know, it kind of didn't really have much to do with the running. It was, like, how fatigued can you get into the water and still swim fast? Because it was basically about the swim, right? So, yeah, the two guys that went head-to-head every year, like, they were way ahead of the field, but it was... And then third place was this other guy who was a surf lifesaver. He was kind of in between them. And then it was, like, me in my final year, like, year 12, when you're, like, at your peak physical... Like, that's the bragging rights year, right? There's no more after this. Yeah. Like, you're going home with a title after this. It was me and the best runner in the year. So, like, he was really shit at swimming, but he was amazing at running. So, like, I would get out of the water... And this is coming off the back of your dizziness question. I'll come out of the water, I'd be so far ahead of him. I'm like, I got this. And then next thing you know, he's basically sprinting past me on the run. But every single time he had, because I was just going one pace, every single time he had to hit that same pace on the run. But what he wasn't accounting for was like how much the swimming started to take out of him, right? Because he didn't have the efficiency. And same on that dizziness thing, right? On the last lap, I was like, okay. My lead was getting bigger and bigger, but he was still getting out of the water and like sprinting hard. And I needed to know, I'm like, okay, I need to pick up the pace on this run if I'm going to stay ahead of him in the last lap on the water. Cause you finish in the water and then you get out and you like cross the finish line. And I'm like, I keep checking over my shoulder, checking. Cause I was like, he's going to get out of this water soon. And that's when, as soon as he gets out of the water, that's when I'm going to hit the ball and pick up my pace on the run. And I watch him get out of the water to get on his last run. And he's so dizzy, he can't run.
Yeah.
So, he gets out, he tries to run, and he falls on the sand. He gets up, tries to run, falls to the other side. To the point where the teachers are, like, trying to help him up to run and stuff. And then I just knew there was just no coming back.
For anyone that's done an event like this, swimming is the most... Like, this was just over 3 kilometers swimming and, like, maybe 15 kilometers of running. But the swimming is fucking what makes the difference.
Oh, yeah.
You watch the people that are, like, struggling with swimming, and the running is fucked after it.
Yeah.
And the people that are, like, floating along and the swimming's easy, they're, like, the running is no problem.
Because you're, like, disorientated when you're running.
Yeah, and I think you just burn up just so much energy in comparison to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Big differences. You want... Probably should do a listener question. Yeah. We'll throw one of them in there. Okay. So, that all started off the accessories. Did we get through the accessories?
No, just a voodoo band. Good accessory, the voodoo bands, to come back to it. Probably not for some
time. Well, we got through one. All right, quickly to give you two more. Strapping tape always seems to be helpful in whatever situation. Taping your thumbs, taping your pull-up bar, taping your hands.
Now doubles to taping your mouth for nasal breathing.
Yep, that's right. And then throw one more in there. What would you do? A watch to time your sets? I always wear my watch to the gym now.
It's a good question. Well, now I actually got this... watch that does like for the swim run training, which is like, and I've never really used it, but like I know a lot of people get into like the GPS watches and stuff, and having a good watch actually is pretty good for training.
Yeah,
I've realized.
Yeah, and it just keeps you on track.
Yeah,
I'm fine with sets and reps. And if you're a PT, if you're a coach as well, you need to have a stopwatch.
Yeah,
and if you know, obviously watch is the most socially appropriate way to have a stopwatch. You don't want to be that PT with it hanging around your neck, looking like a netball coach on the gym floor. Okay. ZG Lifestyle and Movement asks, best advice for movement and good nutrition whilst traveling. Okay, let's do the nutrition. I'll do the nutrition piece, or we'll do the nutrition piece, and then we'll finish with a little bit of movement stuff in there.
Man, the nutrition piece, I've done a lot of traveling, and I've been into nutrition for ages, so I've been thinking about this for the whole time I've been traveling. My worst experience was first time when I was traveling with Rory in America, I lost like, I think I started traveling like 79.5 kilos and finished like the traveling bit, like 7 weeks later, like 75.5.
Oh,
like
wow.
Rapid weight loss.
Nearly 5 kilos.
Long. We were traveling on a serious budget.
Yeah.
Most of the budget went towards alcohol. And man, you can fucking lose weight traveling. Like you can lose muscle hard when traveling if you're not careful. So what I have developed is like when you're traveling, you are basically on the hunt to reach your protein goals. That is your mission for your health and fitness every day, because like life is trying to stop you get there. Because when you're just eating out and shit like that, like the food just generally avoids protein and always has more carbs and fat. So, number one, you try and get as much protein as you can, however you can get that.
Reduce muscle protein breakdown as well.
Yeah, it just keeps your muscle mass. Like, I think if I'd kept up my protein numbers that whole time, I wouldn't have lost all the muscle, but I was probably at 25% of the protein I needed. So you do everything you can to get the muscle, the protein in as early as you can in the day.
It's a really good one.
And then the second one I go for is like, cool, I got the protein. The only other thing I really care about is getting some micros. And generally that is like when we're in America trying to find like a Whole Foods or something like that, or like sometimes even like the hotel buffet breakfast can have some, and you just get all the veggies in you can in like one meal.
Mm.
And that's, and then when I got those two things taken care of, I'm like, cool, everything else is like probably fine now. Mm. I'll just like eat till I'm full and I'll probably be fine. But if I can hit my protein number one and then some micros at just like one meal and go as hard as I can, it's a pretty successful day of eating.
Yeah. The only thing I'll add on to that, that you missed is hydration. I would put a big emphasis on hydration just because your schedule is so out of whack. What that will generally do is kind of throw off, you know, with jet lag and stuff, you know, when certain hormones get released, you know, when you're satiated, when you're hungry, those things get thrown off a lot. You know, you just, your testosterone levels, right?
Yeah.
The whole thing, the whole system's out of whack. And the whole system does rely on communication. A lot of that communication happens through the water in your body, right? All the signaling. So you're going to create a worse situation for a crippled system by not giving it the, basically the highway it needs to communicate to itself, right? Which is adequate water in the system. So I think if anything, drinking water is more important whilst you're traveling than it is when you're just, it's already obviously essential, but I think placing a bigger emphasis on it, however you want to do that, carry a water bottle with you everywhere, set reminders on your phone, you know, buy a bunch of water at the start of the day each time, a few bottles, and just aim to get through them if you can carry them around, if you've got a car or whatever. I think that's one thing that we'll focus on is, I mean, we'll probably have to pee a lot, but because we'll be doing so much driving around and, you know, we'll probably buy a bunch of water.
Massive water bottle, for
sure. Like a big pack of water at the supermarket, put it in the car that we're around and just make sure that we're drinking water throughout the whole thing. And, you know, one thing I actually noticed energy on this water, noticed recently, sorry, on this water point is, I was finding I was getting a really big energy dip around like probably between 1 and 3 o'clock, which is a pretty normal time to get an energy dip throughout the day. But what was also coinciding with that was most of the water I would drink would be in the morning.
Yeah.
And if I trained or if I moved around a lot, if I did a lot of walking or whatever, you do become dehydrated by that time of the day. And I was just thinking, oh, I've banked all my water for the day, not making a conscious effort to drink more water. And I was like, you know, I think I might be dehydrated come like midday onwards. So I started making just a mental note to not change anything and just observe the color of my piss.
Mm.
Very yellow.
Yeah.
And so I started drinking more water right around lunchtime. So I made a conscious effort in the last sort of 2 weeks to drink more water. And that energy dip has been far, far less severe. There was even a particular day around Easter where I was thinking to myself, I've got a lot of energy today, like around this time, like absurd, like very clear. I haven't even had that much coffee. And I was like, I feel really good. And I'm like, I wonder what this is, because those are the days where you want to be like, I want to replicate this day. Yeah. I feel really good today. And it was because I drank so much water that day, way more water than I usually would. I can't remember why, but I just remember I smashed way more water than I normally would in the morning. I think I was in a different cafe and the water was just there and I was having heaps of it. And I just realized hydration actually affects energy and like wakefulness. And if you're drinking more water, you should find that you do have better energy. You do have a longer attention span, more focus, get less tired.
Mm.
So that is one benefit that people don't always consider with water.
I notice that huge all the time. I'll be like, man, I'm like super tired. And then I'll just go and pee. I'm like, oh, I'm just dehydrated.
Mm.
And you start drinking a bunch and it's not instant, but then like quite quickly after you're like, oh, it's like disappeared. I forgot about
it. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly the same with me. I drink heaps of water in the morning and then you can forget about it all day and it hits you around the afternoon.
Yeah.
That you become dehydrated.
Yeah. And the thing is, you're like, I'm tired. I need more coffee.
Yeah.
But that's making your situation worse. Yeah. Which is why I think some people would... It could be why when people are drinking their coffees later in the day, they're getting less tired. They get more tired. You know that phenomenon where people are like, oh, I drink like my third coffee and it tips me over the edge.
Yeah.
And I get more tired. That might be because that extra coffee is dehydrating you more because you're already dehydrated. And then that outweighs the effect of caffeine and just makes you more tired. Yeah. So instead, you should drink more water. So next time you go for like that extra coffee, check yourself, drink more water, see if that picks your energy level up. If it doesn't, go for the coffee.
Yeah, so it's protein, vegetables, water.
Water.
Once you get those, and you can fucking eat whatever you want when you're traveling.
How funny is it how basic it is, eh? But it's important. Yeah.
It's so hard, even honestly, just to get those three when you're traveling. Mm. Sounds like nothing, but it's very difficult.
Yeah, very difficult. Do we have time for one more question? Yeah, why not? Okay, so Alan is a good friend of the show. Actually, Alan has an office in the studio that we're in at the moment on one of the other floors. And he asks, I'll just read out the whole question because it's kind of an interesting way to set this whole thing up. So Alan asks, having just started CrossFit within the last 6 months, Alan did weightlifting for a while. He's been in the gym for a while, but hadn't actually done CrossFit. He says, I feel like I'm in what could be described as the honeymoon period. So though I've got friends who started years earlier than me, they are now in the twilight period of their relation with CrossFit, distancing themselves from it or getting a divorce. What's the deal? Is there a life cycle to most people's experience with CrossFit? What's some important disclaimers from two people who have walked the path? Referring to us as the two people.
Yeah, I think there is a life cycle probably for every form of fitness.
Mm.
You see that just in the marketplace, and you generally see that on an individual level as well. I don't know what it is exactly about fitness that gives you that life cycle. I guess probably a big part of it is just the plateau and results is one that makes it uniquely something that maybe something, say, like just fun stuff like surfing and tennis where you're not really looking for results. You can play it for a longer time because you're not
you waiting. You just enjoy the game.
You just enjoy the practice. Whereas CrossFit, it still can be an enjoyable practice for sure. But maybe when the actual results start to plateau, it becomes less enjoyable, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, I definitely think there is. I would love to know. I'd probably get there one day, but definitely think there's a coinciding a lot of the time with like some physiological change with when people start to get over it as well. Like potentially some sort of like level of burnout, which makes it particularly more unenjoyable for them.
Mm.
And I reckon there's probably some sort of coinciding for most people at some point, probably in any physical regime, but particularly a high intensity one where there's like a bit of burnout, a bit of lack of progress, and it's just not as good as when you first started.
Yeah, I think the guys on Mind Pump did a pretty good critique of it just on one of their shows, and they do get the question a lot around CrossFit, and they admit, you know, it's done a lot for the industry, a lot of good, which no other fitness program before that had been able to do. And you know, a lot of those benefits are it got women to start lifting weights, right? It got them to get into squatting, deadlifting, benching, pressing. And before that, you know, nothing had really hit home to make women want to do anything but Jane Fonda aerobics classes. So it's done a lot of good there. So we've obviously lived through the life cycle. Our clients have lived through the life cycle. And it's pretty fair to say at this point that CrossFit really is a sport. And I don't think it should be sold. And this is the kind of critique that Sal gave on Mind Pump. But it is. It is a sport. It's for time. It's a competition. Everything is measured and quantified. And it shouldn't always be sold as an exercise program. Because you wouldn't sell rugby as an exercise program. You know rugby is a good way to get fit. Right, and to get stronger, right? But it is quantifiable, it is measured, and it is a competition. But generally, structured exercise shouldn't really be that. And it's taken the elements that sport do really well, and it's kind of been selling a sport, the sport of fitness, the sport of being in the gym, to the market as an exercise program. And the problem with sport can be very dangerous, right? Because it is quantified, because it's competitive, because you're always trying to go faster and better, it does lend itself towards the more dangerous side, which we've seen play out, right? People just doing everything they can to get a faster time, jeopardizing their joints, their health, their kind of just overall well-being. So, there is a general life cycle in terms of if you are playing a sport and you are pushing the limits of it, you do sometimes end up injured or burnt out on the other side because it's so competitive. So the problem with most CrossFit coaches and programming is that they're not looking at the long-term goals, right? They're not looking at, okay, how is high-intensity training every day where you pretty much end up on the floor on your back, how is that affecting your long-term health, right? They're only looking at the 6 and the 12-month picture. What I'm interested in is the 10-year picture, right? At Creature, one of our goals is to have a 10-year relationship with our clients, right? And we're on the path to a lot of those. But it's only getting closer and closer to that point because our ideas about programming and what people actually need for longevity has started to change, right? We now know that there are days that you need to walk into the gym and only do strength training and only do bodybuilding training, right? Or work on a skill. Some of our classes now, the first 45 minutes of the class is just skill practice, right? There's a little bit of strength work in there, but we're practicing the skill of, you know, toes to bar. We're practicing the skill of strict muscle ups. And, you know, you'd finish that session and you wouldn't feel like, you know, in quotations, you've done a workout, right? But sometimes that's what you need. You can't go hard every day. And part of the life cycle of CrossFit is kind of what you touched on before, Raph, is the mental fatigue. Having to get up to it. Like, if you go really hard on a day and then you're also being told, hey, you need to go better. Like, it is fatiguing. It is draining to go, fuck, how am I going to put in a bigger effort than that? That's what the coach is telling me is important. How am I going to go harder than that tomorrow? But not even tomorrow, for the next week and the month after and next year. It just feels like an impossible task, but it doesn't need to be like that. You don't have to crush yourself every single day to get better. And the problem is that's what you're kind of sold on with CrossFit. You have to go harder and go bigger and hurt yourself more every time you get into the gym. And it's tough. It wears you out mentally. And it's kind of what happened to us, right? We're like, man, I don't know if I can go through that again. I'm not really up for that anymore. I just want to do something easy. But you kind of feel guilty if you do something easy. But that's not how it should be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the problem is only because it's a sport, but I think the more you treat it as a sport, probably the more of a life cycle it's going to have. Like,
definitely.
For us, how I feel about it now, like, once you've gone, like, really hard at it, it's hard just to do it, like, just at a much easier and for fun level at a different point, because you're just like, oh, well, that was a fucking poor performance compared to maybe where you used to be. And I was trying to think, I mean, other people seem to be able to do cycling and kind of other endurance sports, which are definitely sports, but they seem to be able to do it quite easily as a long-term fitness regime. So, I don't know if it's like only because it's a sport, maybe because it's the type of sport it is, or maybe it's because for those people, like, they never had competitive aspirations in it, or never were, like, competing on a weekly basis, so they don't have that sort of after effect. So, I don't know exactly what it is, but I do notice that, like, the more competitive anyone takes it at one time, the more likely it is to have, like, a life cycle at some point. And the less serious someone takes it, probably the longer they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, we survey our clients, and one of the questions that we ask them is, why do you come to our gym? Right. And Creature Fitness, right now, and I can't imagine it changing, but we serve busy professionals, business owners. We are in a city, all right? We are in one of the most economically rich and opportunistic cities in the world. And people want to have a fit, healthy lifestyle combined with, you know, a good balance of pushing their career forward. That's tough. It's tough. And those are the people we need to serve. We need to go, okay, we can't crush this person because, you know, they need to get up and they need to get after their career. They need to get up and they need to get their kids to school, right? They need to pay their bills. These are really important things to them. And if their exercise program is obliterating them,
yeah,
the whole thing's going to fall apart, right? Their whole life is just going to be much harder. So, for us, it's about optimizing their training and their nutrition so that they can get after the rest of their life what's important for them. And I lost myself a bit on that rant, but basically the idea is that we've kind of shifted the whole goal of when clients come to the gym is that our programming is designed to make you feel better than when you left. And if you're playing a sport, usually what happens at the end of sport is, you know, if you wrap up a rugby game, if you wrap up a tennis match and you go hard, you're pretty beat up. That's not to say that clients don't get days where it's hard and it's challenging, right? But on the overall grand scheme of things, we don't want to beat people up too much. So, in that survey, come back around to it, what are your goals? Why do you come to the gym? To be fitter, to be healthier, to move better. How many people answered to improve at the sport of CrossFit? It was like less than
7-8%.
Oh, yeah.
It's not many.
Very few. Right? And these are people that when they answer that question, they know that they can... They're in the small pool of people that have the lifestyle and probably the athletic background to be able to support that goal. And so, it's just not a priority for people anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but you definitely got sold on it for sure because it's so attractive and it looks so fun. But yeah, definitely overall, I think that to come back to the whole question is like, what is the life cycle? Exactly what you said, Raph. It's like, how hard are you going in it? What are you doing it for? That sort of thing. Are you even, you know, what is CrossFit? You know, like a lot of gyms don't call themselves CrossFit gyms anymore that were once CrossFit gyms. So it does kind of depend where you're at as well. coaches, environment, gym, that sort of thing. Anything else you want to add?
No. But if I was to guess, I wonder how long you'd normally call it. Probably depends on how hard you go, but usually you'd probably say it's like, what?
2 years?
Two to four years.
Yeah.
2 to 3 years.
Two on the low end and four on the, yeah, on the higher end. Well, how long did we do it for before we like really felt like...
5 years probably.
Yeah.
I do think your age and resiliency and time makes a really big difference, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you've got lots of time to recover and train, you're probably going to hit burnout a lot later.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right, guys. Before we move into the review for this week, truecoach.co/MMP. That's where you need to go. Now, so, TrueCoach, if you guys didn't know already, is basically the best platform. And I was watching one of the coaches write his program in there the other day. And then I watched an athlete use some of their extras in their program in it. It's what our coaches at Creature Fitness use. And it's just so efficient. Like, I just look at the app and I just think to myself, this thing is just done so cleanly. It's so easy to use. There's no unnecessary buttons. It's just easy to find where everything is in terms of speaking to your coach, posting program videos of how you're moving and just seeing how different exercises are supposed to be done with movement demos. Like, I'm just really excited for this company and what they're going to be doing in the future. So if you guys want to jump on board for a free trial, you may as well. truecoach.co/MMP. If you go to that landing page, you get an opportunity to sign up for a free trial. And then if you do decide to continue, which I think the vast majority of people do after the trial, you get a percentage off the next month.
Only with our code.
All right. And then, of course, we use the supplements. They're sitting right next to us now, True Protein. You know, there were opportunities that came up in, you know, in the past and in the future of, you know, jumping on board with bigger supplement brands and other supplement brands. But we stay with True Protein because they really have the most high-quality products, right? Everything that they do, every amount that's put in their products is scientifically backed. So, give you an example. There are other companies out there that put products, so let's say, for example, like creatine, they put an amount of creatine in their products and be like, we use scientifically backed ingredients because creatine is a scientifically backed ingredient. But True Protein take it a step further and they use scientifically proven ingredients, but only in the amounts that they're scientifically proven, right? Because someone could put in, you know, a milligram of creatine and be like, we use scientifically proven ingredients, but that is only a scientifically proven ingredient at a certain dose. And True Protein use those doses. And that's really the difference. So, when they have their pre-workouts and that seven different ingredients in there, they're in there at the doses, at the minimum doses that we've seen actual scientific evidence of benefit.
Or even formulas that have been scientifically proven.
Exactly. And that is what separates them, that most people aren't considering between them and other brands. And it's why you might pay a little bit more for True, but wouldn't you rather pay for the stuff that works, right? So, that is something to consider. And they're super clean ingredients. Never heard, you know, stomach issues come up from their products. They've got, you know, really decently tasting flavors, some more extreme stuff, some more fun stuff, and then just some more basic stuff, your chocolates, your vanillas, that sort of thing. So, trueprotein.com.au, you guys can pick up any of their products and get a 10% discount when you use the code MINDMUSCLE10.
And just this week, they brought out their collagen protein, which we have some coming in the mail. We haven't tasted it yet. But if people don't know, this is basically the reason people go crazy over stuff like bone broth, because it has got collagen in it, and it really helps not only with your muscles, because obviously it's a protein, but then it's good for skin elasticity, strengthening your bones, building muscle mass, improving circulation, and they make it from bovine collagen peptides. So they literally get naturally occurring, found in your bones, cartilage and tissue, from cows, and that's where the protein comes from. So it's a different source to, like, if you get like dairy protein, which most people get, or if you're vegan, maybe pea protein. It's got a bit more nutritional benefits to go along with it.
Yeah, the collagen protein is good because we're told to drink bone broth and cook organ meats and eat those, and we don't for a lot of the large majority of our diet, and we do miss out on a lot of the nutrients that are found in those products, and that is essentially what collagen protein is.
It's easy way to get
it. The supplement version of those types of proteins that we miss out on. So, extremely important just for your health and just overall well-being. So, trueprotein.com.au, MindMuscle10, when you check out, it's going to get 10% off any order. All right, cool. So, we have an extremely exciting documentary again to review today. Inspirational is an understatement. It is called Roll With Me. To give you a bit of a background without spoiling the entire movie, this guy, what's his name? Zach? Adam?
No, isn't it? It's Gabriel.
Yeah. Knew it. So Gabe is a former actor, I think he was.
Yep.
Yeah, he was like an aspiring actor. And he got into a horrible accident, which basically left him in a wheelchair with complete numbness from the chest down, I believe he said. So, yeah, that's right. Can't feel anything during sex. All the shit still works, but, you know, also doesn't really enjoy it. And basically turned to drugs, became heavily addicted to drugs, got himself sober, and then needed to find a purpose in his life again. Now that he's bound to the wheelchair. So he's in his 40s and he's 8 months sober, and he decides that his purpose is going to be to inspire other people by rolling across America in his wheelchair for the first time. So people have done that before, but no one has done it in an everyday wheelchair. So previously people had like those speed wheelchairs where they got pumped up tires.
I looked it up. There's a fucking big difference.
Oh, huge difference.
Yeah, fucking big difference.
Yeah.
Those big wheelchairs go fast. His piece of shit wheelchair he's rolling around in, like, it is mind-boggling that shit gets across the country. Like,
yeah.
It goes slow.
Well, there are those ones that they created have parachutes in them as well to slow people down when they're going too fast. So, he's significant disadvantage.
Yeah.
I guess it would be like, he's running across America in Timberlands.
Yeah.
And they've got the Nike all-terrain Super Air Max,
yeah,
like 1,000, you know, like he's crazy disadvantaged.
And he's got a wave vest on.
Yeah.
it fucking looks so difficult that chair he's in. He literally is like rolling slowly across the whole country.
I don't know how he gets up hills in that thing.
Yeah, he goes so slow.
Yeah,
he's going so slow up the hills. And ironically, I don't know if he's read the training journal or not. I didn't mention it in the movie, but he does it in 100 days.
Yeah.
Which would be an exceptional 100-day training journal goal.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, well, part of the movie is basically he brings along his nephew, who's had, like, incredibly troubled childhood. His dad was, like, a drug addict, and now he's coming off drugs or trying to come off drugs as well as part of the movie. So, it's, like, kind of like a side story of his nephew, and he's really trying to inspire his nephew through it as well.
Mm.
And it's a crazy documentary, because I think at the start, they obviously had, like, not much money, because a lot of it is, like, shot on iPhones.
Mm.
And it's, like, not a big production. I think they get more funds as the ride goes along.
Yeah, the quality increases.
And I think their producer jumps on board as they see what's happening. So, yeah, it's really engaging, and I don't want to spoil too much of it, but it is, like, you're definitely watching from the start to the end.
Yeah. This is one that we're going to put in the category of absolutely must watch. Mm. It is worth every single minute that you invest in that hour and a half. I'm going to give the documentary a 4.5 out of 5. Now, previously, I've told you that in order to get this high of a rating, you know, it needs to make you laugh, it needs to make you cry, it needs to inspire you, it needs to take you through the whole rainbow of emotions, and this film absolutely does it. So, 4.5 out of 5 from me.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I probably would have been a 4.5 if they had a bit more money at the start and got some even better shots.
I kind of like that, though.
But I did have a cool feel to it.
Yeah.
And I really didn't think, like, the whole way through, I was like, man, this is insane. Like, how the fuck is he going to get across this whole country? Oh, it is enough. So far.
Yeah.
It's so fucking fast.
And he's not going fast.
He's going so slowly. So, it's really worthwhile thing. It's not, like, exactly fitness, but there's a really cool, I guess, physical edge to this.
Yeah.
And it's just so awesome when these things come to light because...
Oh, it's fitness.
It kind of seems like a waste of time, like, rolling across America. But when you see him does it, he, like, inspires so many people along the way. And it clearly changes his life, changes his nephew's life. So, it's really cool, I think, when people can do these challenges and people can get behind it.
Yeah. So, go watch that. Roll With Me on Netflix. Guys, thank you so much for listening this week. We will see you. We're in America right now, so stay tuned on the Instagram. Turn on post notifications. Check out the story. And remember, if you do enjoy these episodes, guys, just post about it on your Instagram. We'll share it as well. Thanks, guys. We'll speak to you next week.